Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, in your time zone, wherever that may be. Stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains, southwest, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south all the way into South America, north to the pole, and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. And I'd like to thank, as always, Broadcast.com for the wonderful distribution across the World Wide Web of this program. Not only the audio, but if you go to my website and download the G2 program, it's free. Not too many things in life are free. G2 is free. It has this wonderful new codec in it, developed by Intel Corporation, that allows you to come back to my website, click on streaming video after you've installed the G2 program, and see me actually doing the program. I have quite a number of announcements for you that I need to get on in this first hour, the first of which is Father Malachi Martin. I'm sad to report to you that what had been a recovery in progress, and a pretty good one at that, was terribly complicated last Thursday when the father took a fall, very serious fall, which resulted in some blood building in the brain. He was readmitted to the hospital, and they did very much what like what they did for Danyon, and literally drilled holes and put in something to drain the excess blood and relieve the pressure from the brain. Yesterday, the doctors removed the shunt, which had been inserted there to relieve the hemorrhaging. He experienced seizures almost immediately, and at 1:30 p.m. Today, New York time, Father Malachi Martin suffered a massive stroke and is near death. He has received extreme unction, and your prayers are certainly requested. Should Father Martin live until Friday, it will be his 78th birthday. And as you know, Father Martin and I have been very good friends for a long time. He regarded me well. I regarded him very well. Regard him very well. And I think that I would say your prayers are certainly in order. But if Father Martin is to pass, then I would pray that it would be a peaceful transition for him. He certainly did wonderful work in life. And should he leave us, he will be missed, just missed terribly. In a moment, I'm going to bring you a word from Jose Escamilla, who is going to be appearing in connection with the work he does on rods. Remember rods? Rods are these, well, what are they? Life forms. Ed Dame said life forms. And indeed, they appear to be life forms. We ran a video here one night that is still blowing minds out there. And Jose has some updates, and he's going to be making a couple of appearances, so we'll find out about that. There is an announcement coming tomorrow evening in the first hour from Steve Bassett. And I think you know what Steve is doing. He'll have an announcement with regard to the paradigm clock and something brand new that he's doing. Steve feels that the disclosure process is best done from the political point of view. In other words, that we can force disclosure from the political aspect or angle. I respectfully disagree with him on that, but nevertheless think that it is along the many other lines worth pursuing. I just, maybe in my at my age, I've become a little cynical, and I just don't think that our government is going to tell us anything at all until they want to tell us something. And we can submit FOIA requests until the cows come home. We can petition senators and congressmen who may well not know themselves what's going on until the cows come home. And I don't think there's going to be a political solution to this, but I know Steve does, and it is one avenue that cannot be ignored. It's going to be a very, very interesting week tonight. In the second hour, Albert Taylor is going to be here. And he has written a book that just simply has taken off beyond all belief, of course, called Soul Traveler. And it's about out-of-body travel. And, you know, you might note, as you anticipate the possibility of listening to this in the next hour, that some of the world's top physicists, top scientists, like ones I had on last week, acknowledge the probability, not the possibility, but the probability that something continues after we die. Al Taylor will tell you that soul travel, or OBEs, are, I think someone said, as dead as you want, as you'll ever get, and that in lots of ways, it is a lower form of a place you go when you die, and that consciousness continues. It's a very, very interesting topic. That'll be next hour. You don't want to miss that, believe me. Then, tomorrow night, Drew Ross is going to be here. He is a forensic psychiatrist. And his specialty would be killers. Killers. You know, Hannibal. Movies like The Matrix. A serial killers. Son of Sam. On and on and on. He's written a book called Looking Into the Eyes of a Killer. So Dr. Drew Ross will be our guest. A forensic psychiatry is absolutely fascinating. It's like, and I'm sure you've seen the movies, it's like when you get inside the mind of a killer. Not that that's where you want to be, but if you want to catch somebody doing something like that, you've got to be there. So that'll be tomorrow night. The next night, the CEO, until recently, of U.S. Web, the extremely successful Joseph P. Firmage is going to be here. As a matter of fact, over the next 2 weeks, there are going to be, as a matter of fact, I talked to Joe just a little bit prior to airtime late today, and he's looking forward to coming on the air. And he is certainly a heavyweight in terms of being able to move and shake things. And he's got a very interesting announcement for you tomorrow, or for you the next night, Thursday night, actually at 11 o'clock Pacific, second hour of the show. Joseph P. Firmage, you're not going to want to miss that. Then next week, I believe in the first radio interview ever done, another gigantic mover and shaker, perhaps the biggest of them all in this field, Robert Bigelow is going to be my guest. And you've heard quite a bit of the work that Robert has done through some of the people who have done some of this very good work for him and have appeared on this program. Well, he has a major announcement to make, one that I know what it is, and I, of course, am not going to tell you. I'll wait for Bob to do that, but it'll be, I believe, his first radio appearance ever, as far as I know. We'll find out, but I believe that is the case, and when you hear what he has to say, it's going to light some fires out there, believe me. Now, just before Jose, I want to get a couple of things. I've got to get a couple of things in here. Of course, the nation is puzzled and shocked and hurt by the apparent death of John F. Kennedy Jr. We still, of course, don't have the bodies. We have only pieces of the plane. And some evidence that it crashed shortly before landing. The Associated Press tonight is reporting in the final minutes of his flight, John F. Kennedy Jr. pulled up and banked his plane in what had been a normal approach to Martha's Vineyard. Then as he turned to the right again, the plane dropped rapidly to the water. I believe the current theory is it probably broke up. It's like hitting a brick wall if it hits hard enough. So, they don't know why, of course, but there is speculation that young pilots, a common problem, can become spatially disoriented, and it may have been that. We may know or we may never know. They have located at least what they believe to be one undersea a piece of wreckage, or what may be wreckage. We'll know, I guess, tomorrow, maybe. The Federal Reserve has approved a plan to make special loans to banks, thrifts, and credit unions that might need emergency money, money, because of consumers' fears about Y2000 and the date change. You know, they're concerned, and rightfully so, about a run on the banks, people wanting money. So they're going to make loans. This is pretty interesting. Archaeologists dug beneath a football stadium for a month and found the remains of 27, get this, folks, 27 Confederate soldiers near Charleston, South Carolina, including four thought to be the first crew on the Hunley. The Hunley, a submarine made of old locomotive boilers and operated by hand cranks, made history in February of 1864 when it sank the Union blockade ship Housatonic. Its original crew of five was lost in 1863 when the sub sank at its moorings. So isn't that something? All right, in a moment, Jose Escamilla is going to update us on what's going on with the rods phenomena. It really is something. And he'll be giving a talk where that's going to be and whether you can see it and all the rest of that coming up shortly.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What's going on around this planet right now are people who are just fed up. They're fed up with dictatorships, and they've had enough. Now, the big question is, can it happen here? And I think absolutely. One day, if we continue to have this spread of the haves and the have-nots, this continuing push for a new world order, it could happen. Mark my word, it could happen here too. Let's hope not.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, As a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, there is terrorism out there. So in an effort to try to fight it or combat it, we give up these rights. I'm convinced that there are groups out there, sinister, powerful groups, that would create this terror to continue to control us.
I think you're absolutely correct. But of course, anybody that's followed the process of government throughout history, once a government has been given a certain amount of power, it always seeks more. And to suggest that our government is different because it's America, I guess that just shows how historically ignorant the American people have become. Because in a real sense, these things are our fault. Americans are, in fact, now trading liberty for security. Every day, this is going to happen now in our future, that we're going to allow this. It's just a matter of time.
Now we take you back to the night of July 20th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, very quickly, let us go to Jose Escamilla, who has been working on the phenomena of rods since I've known him. And we had, I think, one of the most amazing videotapes last time we were on here with Jose that I've ever seen in my whole life, which we ran on streaming video. And there is no doubt about it. There's something sharing our airspace. There is something with us, around us, near us, interacting with us, some kind of life form. And here is Jose Escamilla. Jose, hi.
Hello, Art. How are you?
I'm just fine. I take it you're down in Southern California someplace.
Yes, I'm at Ross Hunt Production Studios cutting the new Rods video.
The new Rods video.
The new one. It's going to be called Skyfish.
Skyfish. Great name.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a couple of announcements I want to make. I really appreciate you having me on.
Sure.
At the last minute. Listen, tomorrow night at the Pickwick Center at 1001 Riverside Drive in Burbank, I'm going to be presenting Rods, the Mysterious Object, and showing some of the latest stuff we got. I got some footage from Fox TV that was shot at the Cape this last April.
The Cape.
It's the most incredible footage ever. I mean, these high-velocity rods like you've never seen. I'm going to send a dub off to you tomorrow.
All right. Oh, boy.
And I'm going to present it over there at the Pickwick Center this coming Wednesday, tomorrow night. And anyone that wants to go to it, it's the time's to do it now, because I'm only going to show this in the next two events, tomorrow night and Saturday night, at one of the Art Bell Chat Club chapters out of Orange County.
In Orange County.
So I just want to give the information real quick. I know you've got a little announcement to make there. For the MUFON, it's MUFON LA tomorrow night in Burbank at the Pickwick Center. It's a bowling alley.
All right.
And then Saturday night, I'm doing the Art Bell Chat Club chapter of Orange County. They can go to learninglight.com.
Learninglight.com.
Yeah, and it's going to be held at the Learning Light Foundation at 1212 East Lincoln Avenue in Anaheim, California. That's Saturday.
All right.
July 24th. And what I'm going to do, only for these two nights, I'm going to have a special edition available for everyone that attends these meetings. As you know, we're still trying to raise funds to go to the cave, so I'm releasing some footage that no one's ever going to get. You have to attend these meetings, and you're going to get it. I mean, this is the awesomest footage, Art. You know me, I get excited.
I know you, and you don't get excited without cause. That I do know, after seeing the last video. So you're telling me, even compared to the last one, I'd be blown away, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Basically, what happens is you've got these jumpers coming in at 100 miles an hour. Everything is blurred except the two high-velocity objects, and they are rods, and one makes a U-turn. It's the most incredible footage ever.
Well, I want to know what these things are. And I think everybody wants to know what they are, Jose. So I wish you all the luck in the world, my friend.
Well,
and
you know,
when you are able to share the videos after the exclusivity, I hope you will send me a copy that you would let me run as I did before on streaming video.
By all means, everything I get, I will send to you, my friend, and I really appreciate you having me on at this late hour.
Jose, thank you, and good luck.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Take care. If you've never seen the Rods video, it really is. It's one of those things that when you talk about it, you just talk about it on the radio, it's one dimension. But to see the videos in location after location after location, diving into caves, avoiding people, doing all of these wild things, no matter how strict a scientific mind you have, you stop cold and you look and you say, oh my God, what is that? That is something. That is apparently some kind of life form that we are sharing the planet with. Coming up, I've got a little more news for you. And there's this little thing about the Big Bang. No, not the one that was, the one that might be. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
To burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, and all these things in our memories hold, and they use them to help us.
Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired July 20th, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. Coming up, Albert Taylor, who has been a NASA aeronautical engineer with nearly two decades of experience working on satellite systems for the space program. And he will, in fact, talk about the space program on this anniversary and the moon and why we haven't been back. And a lot more. He's the author of the best-selling book, Soul Traveler. We'll talk about that, of course, as well. And he's an active member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. I didn't know about that one, so obviously that's a road we're going to go down this night as well. So all of that coming up. To repeat a very sad announcement for you, Father Malachi Martin is near death, folks. He's in critical condition in the hospital in New York, and he had a fall after what looked like a good recovery. He had a fall that produced blood on the brain, and very much like Danyon, they put in a shunt, literally drilled and put in a shunt to remove the blood and, you know, remove the pressure. And then they removed the shunt. And at that time, he had seizures, extreme seizures of some sort. And then following that, at about 1:30 this afternoon, New York time, yesterday, the father suffered a stroke, a very serious stroke. He's received extreme unction. Your prayers are urgently requested. Should Father Malachi Martin live to Friday, he will be 78. I'll keep you informed. We've got a lot of very good programs coming up for you if you have just joined us. In addition to Albert Taylor coming up in a few moments, we have tomorrow night a forensic psychologist, the kind of guy who looks into the brain of the killer, the violent killer, the Hannibal Lecters, the Son of Sam's, those kinds of killers, the Littleton business, all of it tomorrow night. Should be very, very interesting. Also in the first hour, Stephen Bassett has a couple of surprises for you. We'll do that in the first hour. Then the following night, the next night, we are going to have on the former CEO of U.S. Web, Joseph P. Firmage, who also will have some pretty big surprises for you. As a matter of fact, I heard from him just a few hours prior to airtime. And it's a show you're not going to want to miss. In the following week, we will have on another mover and shaker, Bob Bigelow, and I think Robert Bigelow of the Bigelow Foundation. Both these men have done a lot of behind-the-scenes funding of very serious research. Bob Bigelow has never, to my knowledge, done a radio interview. This will be his first. So, a lot of things coming up, more than I have time to tell you about right now.
Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What's going on around this planet right now are people who are just fed up. They're fed up with dictatorships, and they've had enough. Now, the big question is, can it happen here? And I think absolutely. One day, if we continue to have this spread of the haves and the have-nots, this continuing push for a new world order, it could happen. Mark my word, it could happen here, too. Let's hope not.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, there is terrorism out there. So in an effort to try to fight it or combat it, we give up these rights. I'm convinced that there are groups out there, sinister, powerful groups, that would create this terror to continue to control us.
I think you're absolutely correct. But, of course, anybody that's followed the process of government throughout history, once a government has been given a certain amount of power, it always seeks more. And to suggest that our government is different because it's America, I guess that just shows how historically ignorant the American people have become. Because in a real sense, these things are our fault. Americans are, in fact, now trading liberty for security. Every day, this is going to happen now in our future, that we're going to allow this. It's just a matter of time.
Now we take you back to the night of July 20th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, here is Albert Taylor. Good to have you on again, Albert.
Thank you, Art. It's a pleasure to be here, especially today.
It is a good day for you to be on, since you were with NASA for 2 decades working on the space program. It's good to have you back. And, you know, everybody's been talking about it all day long. It's been on CNN and all the networks and the big celebration, all the rest of it. But the big question, really, Albert, that everybody asks, including my callers and myself, it's been 30 years.
Right.
What the hell? We haven't gone off the planet, save circling it in the shuttle at low altitude. We've been staying home for 30 years since we did it. Why? What's going on?
Right. Well, it's multifaceted. A lot of things happen. Right after Apollo 11 landed, you know, we in America somehow lose interest in flights that aren't the first one. And especially toward Apollo 17, a lot of people weren't, they had to beg to get on the television stations just to get airplay because a lot of people weren't even interested anymore.
Yeah, I do remember that, as a matter of fact, how interest fell off.
It did the same thing with the shuttle. Until the Challenger accident, then everyone was watching that first flight, and then here we are back again where a lot of people have no idea what's even going on with the shuttle missions. You know, and then the thing about it is back when I think it was during the Gemini program, it was proposed that we produce a reusable spacecraft where we could build a space station and use that space station to build another vehicle to ferry back and forth or shuttle back and forth to a possible lunar base that we would build.
Sure.
And then that lunar base would be used to
Mars.
Facilitate a halfway station back and forth to Mars.
Right. Well, what happened to all that?
Well, all of that is vision. I mean, vision. What happened was, all of a sudden, we started having financial crunches. People didn't understand what the space program was for, what we were getting out of it, and it should have been really told to the public what the benefits of the space station, things like Velcro we wouldn't have, and miniaturization of computer chips and things like that. We would have none of those if it hadn't been for the space program.
So then how do we make the argument effectively now?
Well, right now, as a country, we need vision. We need not only the space station currently is not the space station that can facilitate the things that I mentioned a few seconds ago.
Well, it also is coming in so way far over budget.
Exactly. Exactly. That's due to about 4 or 5 redesigns.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I've had people like Gene Myers on here with workable plans for very, very large stations.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some surprises coming up from guests on things that are going to be done outside of government, which will blow some minds, I'll tell you. But basically, we're doing the small, expensive, elitist, a few people go to space kind of thing. That's what our government is doing, and no more. And we talk about it sometimes, but hell, we haven't been back to the moon. We haven't. We should have been to Mars by now.
We have no long-term plans for our space program. We have, like Kennedy said, we're going to the moon when we had only had a suborbital flight.
Right.
So that was extreme vision on his part. And we made it. But right now, the space station was supposed to be this halfway point, but now it can't facilitate that. So you know, in essence, it's several times over budget, and it can't perform the function it was originally supposed to perform.
Right.
So what do we need it for? Really, we don't know what we need it for.
What would you prefer to see the money spent on?
I would prefer to go back to original designs of the space station when it had full capability to do a lot of things. It could even expand itself. It had an onboard shed that a space vehicle would be built in. It was the Cadillac of space stations. Now it's a compact economic model, which really is a floating laboratory, and that's going to replace the Mir space station, but it's not going to have any more capabilities. I would like to see that, because with that opens the door to our solar system. We can do a lot more. And personally, if we can't do that, then I think we're wasting our money. I would also like to see more money put into the Delta Clipper or the vertical takeoff and return vehicle that a few aerospace companies were coming up with.
Yes.
That would be good. And we also need a heavy lifting vehicle, because we don't have a vehicle that can put a lot of tonnage in orbit right now.
That's correct.
The Russians have the Energia booster, which is heavy lifting, but we don't have that at all. So without the heavy lifting vehicle and these other things, we really pretty much are stuck to stay about 300 nautical miles above the Earth, and that's it.
Well, what's the matter with the people?
Well, you know, like I said before, I think the people would rally behind the space station if we said this is what we're going to do, or about the space program. This is where we're going. We're going to build a lunar base because we want to get this. This is the product. And tell the people that. Right now, the average citizen has hard times, is trying to feed their family, they're paying high taxes, and they have no idea why this money is being taken out of their paychecks.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate for a moment and ask you, why should we go back to the moon? We were there. We walked upon it.
Uh-huh.
We didn't find anything spectacular, if you believe all the press clippings and what's been said since, despite innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing special there.
Well, there is an extremely, I think it's predicted that there's an extremely high helium content in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
There's also probably moisture under the soil that we can use for rocket propellants and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It has an observation point that we don't have here. I mean, the closest thing we have is the Hubble Space Telescope.
Right.
From that position, can you imagine mounting a telescope on the moon, doing research from that standpoint? Plus, it would be a great stopping point to help us go, and the knowledge gained on how to live off of this planet would be invaluable. It would be so useful to help us to make that journey toward Mars and actually colonize Mars. You got to start somewhere, and the moon is the closest neighbor. It won't cost us as much time and money as it would to go to another planet, and the information we would gain would be just invaluable.
Could Mars be terraformed?
With the technology that we have today, I would say no. But yes, with future technologies, capabilities, I would say yes. But see, to terraform Mars probably would take a lot of generations and maybe even thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Presently, we've got to change the atmosphere. We've got to get chemicals into the atmosphere that are not going to release certain gases. They're going to reflect it back in and eventually start develop. The atmosphere is very, very thin right now, and it would have to double or even triple.
But there is an indication that at one time Mars had great amounts of surface water and atmosphere.
Right.
Where'd that go?
Well, something happened to the atmosphere, something similar to what's happening to our atmosphere. The ozone is opening up. Our atmosphere is turning to at least some people are predicting, the greenhouse effect. So we don't know if Mars was ever inhabited or if it happened naturally, but something happened to its atmosphere where it slowly started losing it, and it became thin and lost pressure, which is really essential. Right now, if you went there, your blood would boil because the pressure is so thin. So I don't know exactly what happened, but something did happen to change it, and we need to be very aware of that and even study it. That would be another important reason to go there, so that we don't allow that to happen to our own planet.
It's a good point. And there certainly are changes, Albert, going on here on our planet. Ecological changes that are astounding.
Mm-hmm.
Changes, as you point out, in the atmosphere, the upper atmosphere, the ozone, all of it. Global warming, it appears our weather is certainly changed.
Definitely. What we don't realize, Art, I believe, in a lot of cases, but a lot of people do, is that we are one link in the chain of how this whole system functions. And if that link becomes weaker or more dominant than others than the others, or puts more stress on the other links, then the chain is going to break.
I wonder how really small our margin is here on this planet. In other words, the planet itself is always going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's whether or not we're going to be here on it.
And that's very true.
And how many degrees of temperature difference would determine that, I wonder?
Well, we have certain parameters that we as humans can exist within.
Yes.
Plants and some insects have parameters that are beyond what we can.
Yes.
Like, I was amazed that after a forest fire, there were still insects that would come out of the ground and survive the intense heat.
Right.
That we can't. So if those parameters, meaning temperature and oxygen content and things like that, began to shift, it becomes thinner, then, of course, a lot of people are what's going to happen is it won't be catastrophic and happen overnight, but people will slowly start dying of certain illnesses, especially of cancer, when the ozone layer begins to deplete and things like that, and the population will be reduced. Now, whatever happened to the dinosaurs, that's kind of the same thing that happened to them. Their population was gradually reduced until extinction. I don't know if there's a point of no return. I would hope that we haven't gotten there yet.
Well, I would hope that it's not an endless chain of repetitive life and extinction in life, and I want to think of myself as something more than somebody's future WD-40, you know?
Yeah, I wonder about that, too. Is this just the ebb and flow of this particular, dirt ball floating in space, where life forms come up, become very civilized and advanced, and then somehow either destroy themselves or destroy the planet till the planet no longer supports them, and then the planet goes back into a recovery mode?
Well, there are many mainstream scientists now who think that may be exactly the case.
And you know what? If you look at how many species have been on this planet and that are now extinct, which I think is like 90%, then the probability is that it's exactly like that. But the one thing we don't know about ancient civilizations as much as we'd like to, but the one thing we do know is we do have capability and technologies and free will that we don't have to let it go that way if we spend time to understand how it functions.
Well, there's a lot of people struggling at the cutting edge trying to do exactly that right
Definitely.
Now. Whether we win that race or not.
It's going to take planetary awareness and action, not just talk. Action. I mean, there's some things that I love that I have or that you may have or something like that may be causing this damage, over...
That we might not even be aware of.
Right. So we're just going to have to give... We may have to give up some things that we've become very, very comfortable with.
Albert, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. The wind, the rain, and the chain. This seems fitting, doesn't it? Listen carefully.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio. listening to Art
in a moment. This was a very short UPI article that ran and then did not run again. A reporter for the Vineyard Gazette newspaper told WCVB TV in Boston that he was out walking Friday night, just about the time of the crash, and saw a big white flash in the sky off Philbin Beach. Well, hard to say whether there's any relationship or not, but that does appear to be some sort of eyewitness testimony. Guess we'll know in the next couple of days if and when they make recovery of that airplane. All right. We're going to talk for a second about radio, because that's my favorite subject of all the world, radio. It's the best medium there is. People, I've been offered more than 13 television shows in the last 6 months, and I've turned them all down, every single last one of them. Big ones, some of them really big, too. And it's because I, bless your hearts out there, and I watch it, but I don't like being on TV. I just don't like it. I love radio. I have a true, honest, abiding love for radio. And I don't love TV. No disrespect to any of you TV folks out there. It's a very powerful medium. There's no question about it, but it's not mine. And I don't wish it to be.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
Well, all right, back now to Albert Taylor. And Albert, I'm going to say this politely, but a lot of people believe that the reason that we have not, the reasons that we have not gone back to the moon have little to do with public apathy and more to do with what was found,
right?
Or what may be there, and so they think some of what you said is a bunch of crap.
Right. Yeah. I have no reason to steer it in either direction. Just having worked there for so long, and I'm a space enthusiast, and that's where I'm coming from. I love spacecraft. I love exploration and all of that. And I got to see the political machine from within, and I remember the layoffs. I remember the redesign. I was part of that. And I remember how we were all running around saying, but it won't be able to do this. I remember how people were being fired and walked off the compound because their part of the space station no longer existed. And so I'm not talking about from a media standpoint. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about actually hands-on, and I was there working on the hardware.
I hear you.
I actually did training of astronauts at Johnson Space Center, so
I
that's
hear you.
The perspective.
Well, one of those astronauts is Edgar Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
Apollo 14, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've interviewed Edgar a number of times.
Right.
And there was something really, really strange that manifested during those interviews, and that was when Edgar was asked to comment about his emotions, feelings, and recollections
mm-hmm.
when he was actually walking on the moon, he became suddenly very vague and sort of launched into a, you know, Art, here's something I really haven't understood myself
mm-hmm.
In all these years, that my recollections of it all are kind of surrealistic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always puzzled me a little bit.
Right.
Have any thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm only guessing, because I think I met Edgar Mitchell one time when I was working on SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative. He came through and was talking to a few people in a classified area that I was
sure.
in.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, the one thing that I've noticed is that there are a lot of astronauts who have had experiences or some kind of vision or sighting
that's
that
right.
was during a program that they're very, very reluctant to talk about. it may be partially because if you don't understand it, you may sound kind of kooky.
Well, there's that, and there's the fact that so many of the astronauts have had such terribly, terribly troubled or tragic lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's as though when you listen, for example, to Neil Armstrong, the one small step for mankind guy.
Oh, yeah, we know who he is.
He's rather circumspect and intriguing when he talks about... He went to the White House one time and said something really interesting about wondrous things that we will be discovering, wondrous things that are out there. And when he talked of it not as something that he's guessing might be if we explore, but something that he knows is out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Knows is out there.
Or at least that's how he presents it, how he presents himself.
That's how he presents himself.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So...
Well, I you know...
I'm open-minded about all of this.
I can't say for sure what happened and what Neil and Michael Collins and Buzz and everybody else actually know that they haven't shared with the public, but I can tell you this. I have had a secret clearance since I was 17 years old. I'm 43 now. I have worked on things that probably no one will even talk about, and if they do, you won't see it for another 20 to 30 years.
Let me lay this on you. I've got a friend in Hawaii who is a television reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And though it's not for me, God bless TV. I have nothing against television except where I'm part of it. But he went and covered a speech, a discussion with Buzz Aldrin. And mm-hmm. at the end of the presentation, Buzz Aldrin unveiled a big picture of a gray.
Mm.
A gray alien, you know,
wow.
the typical gray. And his final comment to the audience was, they are out there. And there was this sort of nervous little
wow.
chuckle that went through the audience. And nobody, because it was the end, nobody got to really ask him what he meant by that or whether it was supposed to be some kind of joke or...
Wow.
But he said that.
Wow, I didn't know that. That really stands out to me because Buzz is one of the few scientists back in the Apollo program that went into space. He was, I think he was one of the only scientists or aeronautical engineers that was in space.
Well, some might absorb that comment and think, aha, he saw something.
Mm-hmm.
Others might absorb that comment and simply sort of have the, look how many stars and systems and planets there are. And from the movie, if they are not out there, what a waste of space kind of comment.
Well, personally, Art, from all the things that I've seen, and I've seen a lot of incredible technologies that are classified top secret even, and I've wondered on where they've originated because it seemed to make a huge leap in anything that we had worked on previously. I can say this, that I don't think it's a question of whether they're out there. I think it's more of a question is when is the government going to admit it? That's how I feel about it. I think the evidence is almost overwhelming.
I track a lot of people doing a lot of work in this area, lawyers, lobbyists back in Washington who think the political venue is the way we're going to break this open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I agree with that. In other words, I don't think that political pressure, and I know Steve Bassett's sitting out there cringing, but I don't think political pressure is going to do a damn thing, and we're not going to know until we're meant to know.
Right. I don't think so either. I mean, wasn't it the senator from New Mexico who tried to get information?
A Congressman Schiff, yes.
Right, and he was stonewalled. I mean, so I don't think – I think – the only way that it's going to be revealed is from a meltdown, meaning a scandal, huge one, where the evidence cannot be hidden anymore, that kind of thing, because I believe, and this is why I think that, because having been in the military and worked on nothing but military programs, everything is under the label of national security.
Well, let me tell you something. NIDS, which is financed by Bob Bigelow,
mm-hmm.
recently did a study and asked the high-end percentage of the public, a big survey with a very small error margin. They asked people in the survey, if there's extraterrestrial life out there, do you think the government would hide it?
Oh, definitely.
The answer came back. 8 out of 10 mm-hmm. said absolutely.
Yes.
And hardly any survey that you run, short of the one about George Bush right after the war,
right.
gives you that high of a percentage ever.
Right.
On anything.
Well, it makes perfectly good sense. If you think about it, let's just simplify it a little bit. Now, you have an island where their most effective weapon is the bow and arrow. And all of a sudden, a world war, for some odd reason, a plane crashes and the natives on another part of the island find in the wreckage a machine gun.
Right.
Okay? They're not going to tell everybody, the other natives, that they found this incredible thing. They're going to figure out how to use it, how to make more of them, and then they're going to use it to sustain or take some type of control over their little piece of the island. I think that's what we would do, and I think that's what we have done, is we're trying to maintain national security and control.
And so you are saying that our little piece of the island, in this case the United States,
mm-hmm.
if it possessed this kind of technology, would be back engineering like crazy.
Oh, yeah,
would be
definitely.
Doing all kinds of things with the technology,
definitely.
But sure as hell not telling the population nor
right.
the world about it.
Right, because when you tell the American citizens, you're also telling the enemies of this country and people who would do us wrong. So you can't let everybody know. Unfortunately, once you let it out there, loose lips sink ships. I mean, it's been around for a long time. We know that. So that's why if it's out there, it's not necessarily because we are the threat, even though they may want to squelch some kind of panic.
Can I ask you how people react to extraterrestrials. Yes, can I ask you a straight-out question?
Sure.
And if you can't answer it, then I will. I'll take my answer from that.
Okay.
But
if I can't answer it, I'll start talking about my book.
Okay. since you had secret and beyond clearances, were you or are you aware that anything that we have just been discussing is more than speculation?
Based on my experience or just...
Yes, direct knowledge.
That's a difficult one to answer.
So where can they get your book?
My book is available in all the bookstores, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble.
It's called Soul Traveler, folks.
Soul Traveler is available nationwide. It's even in the libraries. So if you don't have any money, you can read it for free. It's not about that. What's really important to me is the message within the pages, because I'm sharing my description of what has happened to me, and which has changed my life in a spiritual level that I never, ever dreamed possible.
Well, one thing that, of course, everybody would be curious about is how you go from being a hardware guy, an engineer with NASA for all those
right.
two decades, and make the giant leap for mankind into the metaphysical. I mean, how do you do that?
It's real simple, Art. It's called midlife crisis. No. No, I've been having some strange... I was still training astronauts at Johnson Space Center when these things started happening to me more often. They used to happen about once a week. But about 7-8 years ago, I started having some strange nocturnal experiences that really scared me. And I started keeping a diary. And they were related to, like I've mentioned before, a superstition that's been in my family for a long, long time. And that has to do with night paralysis, where you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't move, but you can see
that's
and hear.
That's how you and I met.
That's how I started writing this book, because I was having these episodes not only once a night usually, but sometimes three times a night, and they were scaring me so bad as a grown man, I would literally stay up all night long afraid to go back to sleep. That's how I got into it. I feel like I was kicked or thrown into it rather than something that I consciously wanted to explore.
All right. When this paralysis, and many, many of us have experienced that at night, began,
mm-hmm.
it is damn scary stuff.
Very scary.
Wake up in a sweat. It's awful.
Right.
How did you learn to begin to control that?
Well, I had a lot of opportunities. Especially in one night, I got a chance to experience it three times. So it wasn't like one night and then a week later. I was having a nightly basis. And then what happened, this was happening by itself. And so as being a researcher, I wanted to know if there was something physically wrong with me, neurologically or something like, or psychologically. So I started going through the process of elimination, and I stumbled upon the reason why it was happening more often than not. And what I did, the way I stumbled upon that, is because I just started duplicating what I did on the night that it happened by itself. And when I did that, when I was able to find this thing, which has to do with interrupting your sleep pattern, I was able to experiment with it a lot more than just waiting for it to happen. And when I was able to do that, that's when I got a little bit braver and a little bit braver, and I realized that I was safe because nothing happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I got the courage to start exploring this and to find out what it really was.
Now, I know that you've called your book Soul Traveler. Are mm-hmm. you really sure that it is our soul that's traveling?
Well, if I were sitting in your living room and you and I were just having coffee, and you said, Al, do you really believe in this stuff and what's really going on? I would have to say, Art, I never in a million years would have believed this 7 years ago. I would have thought you were nuts if you had told me I'd be talking about this or even that this was something that was real. But I can tell you, after having all of these experiences, and I continue to have them, and they build upon each other, they're not isolated, they've rounded my understanding of this phenomena and who and what I am, I have to tell you, one-on-one, Art, yes, I am thoroughly convinced, 110%, that we definitely have a soul, and it can operate independently of the physical body.
There are a lot of people who talk about mind and soul,
mm-hmm.
That there is a difference, and all of this is going to wind shortly into near-death stuff, because
mm-hmm.
I know that you've done a lot on that.
Right. A lot of my friends have died and come back.
Yeah. A lot of people say that when you sleep, you experience a little slice of death.
Death each night. Correct.
You agree with that?
Totally, yes.
And that little slice of death can include movement from the body of the soul
mm-hmm.
as it moves when you die.
Correct. The only difference I believe between what we do each night, consciously or subconsciously or unconsciously, the only difference between that and death is that we come back to our physical bodies. Consciousness-wise, in the experience, I believe it's almost the same. And as a matter of fact, I have to quote a dear friend of mine, Robert Peterson. He said that we are the ghosts. And I like that because truly we are. We just have a place to come back to.
But, you know, some nights you go to sleep and you don't even dream. It's
mm-hmm.
just velvet blackness, right?
Well, you don't remember.
Well, you don't remember, all right.
Right.
So to you, when you wake up to your conscious mind, you have just had velvet blackness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Other nights, you have dreams or vivid experiences.
Right.
With regard to people who have come close to death or to death's door and then come back, some experience something magnificent, others experience velvet blackness.
Right.
Right?
Right, correct.
When we come back, let's talk about what that might mean. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Albert Taylor is here, from NASA work to metaphysical work. Quite a leap, huh?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999. premier radio networks.
If you want to take a ride, stick around, because we are going to tell you how. We've got the expert, probably the nation's expert on that right now, Albert Taylor, who wrote a book called Soul Traveler, and he can tell you how to leave your body. And I can tell you, it can be done. Not that I had any direction in what happened to me.
Mark Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right. Since the passing of Robert Monroe, who I had the distinct honor of interviewing, probably the person best known now for out-of-body experiences is Albert Taylor. And a lot of people out there want to know specifically what this is, so I guess we're going to have to tell them and tell them how they can do it. But why you? So many people don't have this, but Albert Taylor has not only has it, but has it almost at will. Why you?
I ask myself that same thing, Art. You know, and a lot of people, some people have told me why it was me, because I really can't say for sure. But for some reason, with the background that I have and all that, I didn't come from a woo-woo kind of background or
right.
Upbringing. I'm a very rational person. I've always been working in aerospace and always succeeded in everything that I've done. I've always been able to present legitimate and valuable information to NASA and a bunch of other people. So this thing, I guess because I have all those credentials, maybe that helps to add credibility to this thing that's so unbelievable, and that maybe that is what it takes to actually get the information out to people who would otherwise be skeptical.
Okay. Well, I love asking you hard questions, so here's another one.
And I was choking. No.
We were ruminating about the space program, 30 uh-huh. years since we went to the moon. Why aren't we going out? Blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
If soul travel is real,
mm-hmm.
and if, in fact, you can go to other... If you can go to the moon, soul travel,
yes.
the moon, Mars,
yes.
the other planets,
yes.
distant stars,
definitely,
in effect exceeding the speed of light,
definitely.
Then who's to say that the rocket ships, the hardware, the big heavy energy boosters or Saturns that we had or whatever are the way to go at all? Because maybe that's not the way interplanetary distances are bridged.
Well, we're talking about the majority of the population are not going to be able to retrieve this kind of data. And the majority of the population are not going to be able to remote view and do things like that. So it is the way to go until we make some kind of shift where the majority of the people have this capability. Then, to tell you the truth, having to gain the information physically will cease to be as important. But right now, it is very important because the majority of us are very physical beings and haven't our talents haven't blossomed yet regarding this.
Well, that I understand. But I mean, if soul travel is everything you say it is,
mm-hmm.
then, well, frankly, with what we know right now and what Einstein has taught us, we are not going to go to other suns and other systems. We can't do that. It will take too long. Soul travel, on the other hand,
uh-huh.
Will get us there if what you're saying is correct.
Definitely. But, you know, the thing is that even if it's a lot easier to have a high reliability in a mechanical device that we create to transport us to a new location than with the out-of-body experience. It's not 100%. You can't do it every time, and it depends on whether you're going to be relaxed, so that makes it very difficult for laboratory conditions and things like that. So until a new generation, or maybe we as a species, are evolving to this point where maybe the children being born now are going to have this capability more than the generation, my generation. Maybe we're going to evolve to a state where this is going to be very commonplace. We may be in transit, so we can't expect a lot out of it right now. What we can do is explore it and try to understand it as much as possible.
All right. Tell people out there, if they want to try this, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to hear, it's true, it can be done. You can leave your body, it's real, and this man can tell you how to do it. It begins frequently with a very discomforting
paralysis,
right. Followed by a kind of a buzzing sound,
correct.
A very loud buzzing sound that you'll hear as you're on the edge of sleep.
Correct.
Or,
and a vibration.
And a vibration, yes. All of that. I've had that. I can't stand it. It makes me nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
And I reject it every time I've ever had it. But if you're able to master and get past that, then you can travel outside your body. And the question is, how do you do that, Albert?
Well, there's after having done, I've written like five different techniques or so in my book. But the one, there's two that I really think are very, very important. And the one that is easy for people who have trouble quieting the mind.
Yes.
If you have trouble quieting your mind, then this one helps you. And that one is called the interrupted sleep technique. And what that is for various reasons, you want to try to control this whole thing from beginning to end. And part of that control comes with eating early on, meaning before 6 o'clock at night.
Mm.
The reason you want to do that is because late at night, the body is still using energy to process food, and you want to kind of free the body up from that. So what you want to do is go to bed maybe about 9 or 10 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
set your alarm clock to wake up about maybe 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning, get out of bed, turn on Art Bell, and listen to Art for a while. I'm not going to say how long.
Yeah.
Until you start getting tired or sleepy, then go back to bed. Drink water. Do not eat anything. You can't eat because that just takes a lot of steam out of what you're doing.
Right.
Go back to bed and then lay perfectly still and in a very, very comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
Don't prop your head up very high, that type of thing. And what I like to do is say if you're laying flat on your back, a lot of people have a lot of discomfort with that. Put something under your knees to prop up your knees a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Get all your scratching out of the way, itching your nose, and whatever you're going to do. Because once you stop moving, you do not want to move under any circumstances. Because it's going to take a while for your metabolism and your body's functions to slow down. Now, what you want to do with your mind is you want to keep your mind focused on something very, very simple. And that could be just focus on relaxing each muscle in your body one at a time.
Now, I've done that as a method to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, folks, it really does work. If you're having trouble sleeping, relax your finger, relax your hand, relax your arm, relax your shoulder, relax your body, relax your legs. Consciously sit there and go through each part of your body,
right.
Consciously relaxing it. And,
systematically.
And it does work. You
right.
Sleep.
And what, you know, it's kind of a twofold thing. The key to getting out of the body is relaxing the physical body. And another thing is that since you've interrupted your sleep pattern, your body still requires about 4 more hours of sleep.
Correct, yes.
So what happens is you're giving your consciousness something to hang on to while the body falls asleep. It's kind of like when you're on the freeway. I've mentioned this before. When you're driving and maybe you've been tired, and no matter how you try to stay awake, for a brief second, you nod out at the wheel.
That's right, and you jerk back and
right.
you go...
No matter how hard you try,
you say,
you
usually say the same thing that pilots are said to say just before they crash.
Right.
So that's what you're
trying to induce in a safe environment. And you're laying in your bed. You don't have to worry about jerking back awake and finding yourself doing 70 on the wrong side of the freeway or whatever.
Well, these experiences do occur on the cusp of sleep, don't they?
Right. Correct. Exactly.
Which is why you're telling people to interrupt their sleep.
Exactly. And what you want to do is you want to give yourself a fork in the road, because as you're slipping into a different state of consciousness, one thing can happen. If you take the road to the left, let's say, you slip into a dream state with the body. But what this interrupted sleep technique does is it gives you a better option, a better chance of taking the road to the right, where your body goes to the left and falls asleep, and your consciousness goes to a superconscious level. That's what you want to do. So you want to focus in on just relaxing your body
and
let your body go fall asleep.
Now, I had my experience, which was just poof, and I had no precursor, none of the stuff you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, I was just up there.
Right.
That's how it happened. Wasn't was not voluntary.
Right.
Believe me. Now, where, I mean, how, once you have achieved taking the right fork in the road,
mm-hmm.
what can you do?
Well, yeah, the thing is once you take that turn and your body falls asleep and the gate swings open, let's say.
Yes.
The gate swings open and
yes.
the spirit emerges
yes.
in its natural state, because that's where you really come from. That's where you know things that you never, ever dreamed about yourself. Once you get to that point, anything, and the sky is the limit. I have not found any limitations as far as physical locations on where I could go and what I could access. But what I found out is that the physical is just a minute and very tiny part of where you can go. The non-physical is where you find the universe and things that you never dreamed existed, like life after death, because I never believed in that. I never believed in that at all. I thought we were just this genetic accident that after you died, that was it, you turned to dust. But that door swings open where you can find validation and personal validation, not believing what I say, but you can actually experience it yourself, where you see relatives that you know or that have passed away in the past. You can see strangers even. And you can see things, people or entities that we've written books about, biblical books about, like angels and things like that.
Non-human entities.
Right. Or you can see this light that everyone talks about
yes.
when they've had the near-death experience.
Yes.
All of that is available.
And you can travel also in this physical world. In other words, you can go to your living room. You can go to your friend's living room 100 miles away.
Right.
You can do as you will.
You can go anywhere. There aren't any limitations. Some people say, well, if two people don't want you to come into the bedroom, will there be some kind of barrier? Well, unfortunately, no, there won't be. You have access to...
You stay the hell out of my bedroom, Albert. So you...
I got to tell you this. My family is very superstitious. And I remember when I first wrote my book, I was telling my aunt about, auntie, I travel all over the place, and I fly and go in rooms and see things that I never, ever dreamed. And she told me, my aunt said, well, if you come to my room, I'm going to shoot you. I said, auntie, you're going to put holes in your wall.
Yeah, holes in your wall is right.
But there aren't any limitations that I found.
All right, somebody writes and asks a pretty good question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible for someone else to enter your dreams, or put another way, to astrally travel with you?
Yes, it is possible to interact with the dream material of somebody else, because what that dream material is it manifests in something called thought forms. You can read thought forms, you can feel thought forms, and in some cases you can influence thought forms, but in very, very limited cases. But yes, you can. You can experience someone's dream or get as they would experience it, but you can have a sense of what's going on.
Are we talking about a plane where there is not time as we measure it in a linear fashion?
There is no time at all.
There is no time.
At all. You are where your state of consciousness wants you to be. If you are aware that you have no limitations regarding time, then the door swings open and you can access that past, present, and future.
So then you might describe them as little slices of immortality.
Definitely, because especially... there are a lot of hidden things beyond the physical plane, things that are very natural and things that are occurring. If you can access, let's say, the past on things that have happened in the past that you knew nothing about that maybe involved you, well, that's going to tell you a lot more about the present and probably a lot more about the future if you know that you have existed in some shape or form in the past, or that something occurred in the past that explains what's happening today in the physical plane.
Well, how about this to consider, Albert? That the human, that mankind may have been going and still is going in exactly the wrong direction. In other words, to achieve all that mankind wants or would like, the pursuit of the physical, the pursuit of the sciences, the pursuit of the academic may be all the wrong direction. And the right direction may be completely within, and we just simply have missed it.
Or, that's one perspective, or it might be, and I like this one a lot better,
okay.
Is that maybe we're headed in the right direction, it's just we have a choice of running or crawling or walking, and maybe some things that we obsess on along the path slow us down, but yet we still are going to get there. Technology, all these physical things will slow you down regarding that non-physical reality. But I believe still we're still headed in the right direction.
So technology is sort of a, what would be the word for it?
A handicap. Spiritual handicap.
Or a distraction.
It is a distraction. It is. To tell you the truth, the five senses are a distraction. So anything your five senses tell you will either turn your head away from the non-physical. And the more you focus in on what the five senses tell you, the less you're going to be able to perceive something that is non-physical.
But if God or the Creator had meant for us to be spiritual and not physical, then what the hell did he give us noses for and a mouth so we could make noise and ears so we could hear? And why did he give us all of these senses if we were not meant to evolve at least through and past them?
Because I believe that the challenge spiritually is overcoming these things. I believe that that's what makes us stronger, is overcoming these things that are so powerful in our lives and these things that a lot of us only identify with. To overcome that makes you more spiritually sound, I believe. And I believe it's helped me because I'll tell you, the way I have been brought up and the schools and things that I have gone to did not help me to accept what I've written about at all. It was a handicap. I was too logical.
If anything, it conditions you in the opposite direction.
Slows me down.
Right?
Slows me down tremendously and in a lot of cases reverses my course. But eventually, you know, I couldn't run from this, Art. I couldn't rationalize myself away from it.
Why should anybody out there right now listening who has never traveled outside their body want to?
Well, I get that question a lot.
Good.
And
you've got it now.
The one thing I say is that, and I don't want to generalize and say this is going to happen to everybody, but I can tell you this. In my life, it has changed my perspective on everyday occurrences. It has changed my perspective on how I relate to other people. I have more peace and well-being and satisfaction in my life than I ever dreamed. And even in the face of adversity, I've had some really tragic things happen to me, Art, since you and I have been speaking. I mean, a year ago, my son, who is a Marine, had a horrible car accident and broke his neck and is now in a wheelchair paralyzed. And for a while he was on a respirator and we thought we were going to lose him and all of that. And then through that adversity, I had a spiritual light at the end of the tunnel that helped me make it through. And I would say that I'm glad that I had these out-of-body experiences and this change.
In other words, it helped you handle that.
Definitely. Glad that I had it.
I
can't imagine doing without it.
All right, hold on. We'll be right back. When we get back, we'll open the phone line. So if you have a question for Albert Taylor, author of the best-selling book Soul Traveler, and yes, you really can travel outside your body, then we'll go to the phones when we get back. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
Yeah.
Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
And Albert Taylor is here. His book is Soul Traveler. It's available nationwide in bookstores. So just ask for it. Soul Traveler by Albert Taylor. It is virtually a how-to book on how to leave your body, how to travel on the astral plane. It's fascinating stuff, and it's real. Believe me, it's real. In a moment, we're going to open the lines.
Streamlink, the audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM, has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price, just 15 cents a day when you sign up for 1 year. The package includes podcasting, which offers the convenience of having shows downloaded automatically to your computer or MP3 player, and the iPhone app with live and on-demand programs. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. Just think, as a new subscriber, over 1,000 shows will be available for you to collect, enjoy, and listen to at your leisure. Plus, you'll get streamed and on-demand broadcasts of Art Bell's Somewhere in Time shows and 2 weekly classics. And as a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Norrie and special guests. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today. You never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You know, there is terrorism out there. So in an effort to try to fight it or combat it, we give up these rights. I'm convinced that there are groups out there, sinister, powerful groups, that would create this terror to continue to control us.
I think you're absolutely correct. But of course, anybody that's followed the process of government throughout history, once a government has been given a certain amount of power, it always seeks more. And to suggest that our government is different because it's America, I guess that just shows how historically ignorant the American people have become. Because in a real sense, these things are our fault. Americans are, in fact, now trading liberty for security. Every day, this is going to happen now in our future, that we're going to allow this. It's just a matter of time.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
Well, maybe this will set up what I'm about to ask Al here. A beautiful blonde goes into a videotape rental store and decides for the first time in her life that she's going to stroll over to the X-rated section and rents an X-rated movie and takes it home and sets the mood, you know, candles burning, all the rest of it, flips the TV on and puts the movie in and hits play and nothing, just static. You know, like you have when you turn your TV on with no antenna, just nothing but static. Well, she sits there, laboriously, watching an hour and a half of pure static. Fortunately, it's a 24-hour-a-day store, so she calls the clerk and says, you know, look, I rented a movie from you earlier today, and there's nothing but static on it. And he says, well, you know, this does happen from time to time with our suppliers. You know, these sorts of things do happen. Which movie did you rent? And she said, Head Cleaner. So, I'm going to use that to transition into a question about sex and soul travel.
Okay. I'm ready.
Is there any... I mean, sex is, after all, a pretty physical thing, but it's also somewhat spiritual as well. There are spiritual aspects to it.
Is it a physical thing, Art?
We've all heard of, no.
Without being really, really detailed about and graphic about this, we've all heard of the term nocturnal emissions.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with physical. You're asleep when this happens.
Otherwise, wet dreams.
Right.
Right,
so
okay, yeah, sure, they're
is
real.
Is it a physical thing? or is it a mental thing?
Actually, most of sex is in your head.
Yes.
I mean, other than the obvious physical plumbing, it's in your head.
Exactly.
No question about
so
it.
So if it's in your head...
That's why I'm asking the question, because I think that there should be a connection.
There definitely is. Astral sex is something very common for people to experience when they first start having these type of journeys.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I have so many letters. I'll share them with you one of these days.
Well,
people asking me about astral sex and that it's happening to them.
Or
that they are initiating it, even.
Well,
quite common.
Well, isn't that... isn't that like cheating?
Well, like cheating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You mean cheating,
I mean, like,
if you're
cheating,
like a married person?
Well, yeah.
I you know, that's a judgment call.
but anyway, the fact of the matter is we've never really talked a lot about this.
No, I've kind of skirted around it when you brought it up in the past.
Uh-huh.
Because, well, you know, it happens a lot. And sex, and I'm still trying to understand the connection because it is a very, very mental, and it seems to be a very non-physical soul spirit type thing. But in the astral, it's different. It's first of all, it's more intense, and it is more like a sharing of energy of some sort rather than a physical activity.
You're certainly right. It's very intense.
Yes. I'm very curious about it.
I have a question for you,
mm-hmm.
which I really probably should be asking my wife, but I'll ask you. Since you do research on the subject,
uh-huh.
I know that men have these dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I know. But do women, as frequently as men,
have these type of dreams? Or,
yeah.
or are we saying dreams?
I heard
or are we
a scream from the other room. I don't know what that meant.
Are we saying dreams or astral sex?
Astral sex.
It's pretty much even across the board.
Even across the board?
Yes. From the letters that I get, it's about even.
Huh. So women don't dream about romance novel situations. They dream about sex too, huh?
Yes. I have, from the letters I've gotten, people have definitely asked me questions about it. Some people, and a lot more people than not, enjoy it very much and brag about it in their letters to me.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe you, but not their mate, huh? All right, let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yes, hi, Albert.
Hello.
My name's Ed. I'm calling from Miami.
Uh-huh.
Art.
Yes.
I don't want to give you a mental hernia, but just to get off the subject of sex, you mentioned there seemed to be something invading our airspace. During the Mars landing, I had a regular RCA a receiver, and strangely enough, I received strange soul reception. It possibly is some invasion from outer space headed towards Area 51.
What are you talking about?
It just was one of my cliché, mind-boggler
You're running out of air, sir.
Well, I want to ask him about reception in outer space, and what does he think about the fact that it has to do with angelic beings?
I'm not sure if I quite understand what he's asking me, Art.
I think his gas is igniting now.
No, I'm not igniting yet. My question. Yes.
I'm not clear on your question. I'm sorry.
I was just trying to be facetious when I always talking about Area 51, but I received some strange signals with just a RCA receptor.
No, I know you told me that already.
Okay.
So
that's rather
so
strange.
So if they're strange signals you didn't understand, how the hell would you know where they're going?
Well, that's the question, Art. You know, we were talking about sex, soul, space, et cetera. I know I sound a little spaced out now. I want to check.
Yes, you are. Are you spaced out now? You are, aren't you?
Thank you.
Welcome. See you later. We got to go. All right?
Thank you.
All right, I love your show.
And I hope that you can reformulate yourself and survive. It must be the humidity down there. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Diller. Hello.
I love your show, Art.
Yeah, thank you. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello there. You're going to have to yell at us, sir.
Hello, Albert.
Yes, sir.
Yes. I was wondering if you were familiar with a book by Dr. Robert Monroe, I believe his name was.
Of course, yes.
All three volumes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm an old reader of those books, and also a fellow soul traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fascinated to hear the topic being the subject of the discussion tonight.
You know, I was so grateful that I was complaining, literally, about these experiences to a friend that I trusted, and he handed me Journeys Out of the Body, the first one. And I was so relieved to read in there that I wasn't the only strange individual out there having these experiences.
Yes,
it validated my experiences. It gave me courage to explore it even more.
I completely understand where you're coming from there. I had a similar experience. I found the books myself as a young lad, almost 30 years ago now. And it definitely does change your entire outlook on life.
Of course it does.
Definitely. I love the contrast. Robert approached this phenomenon very scientifically, did an admirable job, and the Monroe Institute is still carrying on his research admirably.
Yes, let's take a second out and talk about the Monroe approach versus what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Monroe did approach this from a more scientific point of view with hemisync and all the rest of it.
Correct.
He used aids, which he felt helped put the brain in the proper
synchronization.
Set and setting, people will remember, from the 60s, to accomplish what you're talking about.
Right.
So how do you feel about that, the addition of perhaps certain tones and frequencies?
Well, I think that it takes what it takes. If you want to learn to ride the bike and you have to use training wheels to get you there or whatever aids you may need, then all that matters is that you get on there and you start riding. Eventually, the goal is to not be dependent on mechanical means, because it is accessible with training your own consciousness on how to do this. But to give you a head start and to get you on there, I think you should do anything you can. Use any tool that's available to you.
So if you think that's the path for you to follow, that'll help.
Definitely. And you know what?
I recommend you try
as many things as you can until you find something that feels comfortable and works for you.
Have you tried some of the Monroe techniques?
I've listened to the HemiSync in the very beginning,
yes,
the tapes.
Yes.
It definitely got me into a very relaxed state. I definitely got the vibration and things like that. But me, unfortunately, I was using a cassette tape recorder.
Right.
And right when I was just getting to where things were really starting to happen, they clicked off and brought me right back. So I recommend CDs rather than cassette tapes. It hasn't.
You put them on a loop.
Yeah, something's the way it doesn't disturb you. But you know,
you remember the end of Somewhere in Time when he pulled out the penny?
Yeah, and it brought him right back to the reality.
Yeah.
But I recommend training the mind, because that's the easiest. You don't need any tools, any CDs or anything. You can be in the middle of the desert, in the middle of the forest, or wherever. If you train your mind, you will always have that ability.
Gotcha. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor.
Hello.
Hi,
my name's Linda.
Hi, Linda.
I know exactly what I'm going to say, and you know, I'm just going to have to take it for what you guys come up with. Back in 86, I had a real severe accident, a head concussion. I was in a cognitive rehab block for about 6 months. And I was a spiritual religious, but I had a lot of things, like a vortex kind of opened up and all this stuff came in. And I didn't have a teacher. I'd go to the bookstore and ask for the things that were happening to me if they had books on it, and they would give me one, and that's how I kind of self-taught me. And then, like now, you know, you can get books on everything, and I've had like two life-after-death experiences, and I had something very strange happen to me. I finally got a book on cosmic voids, and I read about the remote viewing.
Yes.
And so that validated what I was going through, because I wake up and I'm on ships. And they're different ships. And
do you feel like you're there physically?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I started that first, and for some reason I had something telepathically come to me on how I could do that invisibly so that I wouldn't be at risk when I was finding myself on these ships.
Mm-hmm.
I've only seen three UFOs, and I saw them all at once. And so for me to continually wake up on these ships was a little, needless to say, strange and very, very scary. I'm not now, but it was, you know, I've been going through this for a very long time. Now, what has happened, and I've tried to do my own research on this, is I'll be 52 this year. I had a hysterectomy when I was 23. And I have spent, not in the last 2 years, but prior, almost 4 years giving birth to hybrids. And there are some people who have gotten some attention towards this issue, but nobody will go anywhere with it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's you've got a lot of women out here. You know, there are some books that a couple I've read, and I've seen one movie where they drew the attention to this issue and said how women are impregnated, and then usually they take the baby within 3 months.
If I was a psychologist, ma'am, I might suggest to you that having had a hysterectomy so early in your life, your brain may be projecting something that you need or wanted and didn't get in your life. Have you considered that?
Yes, I have. And I will tell you this. One of my best friends I have is an Oriental person that was a flight training coordinator for United Airlines.
Right.
And some other professionals that I had them take pictures of me because my abdomen would swell up to about, like, I looked like I was 9 months pregnant.
Really?
I went to the doctors. My breasts have lactated milk.
Do you have these pictures still?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Please send them to Art so we can post them.
Please send them to me.
Okay, and the thing is I want you to know that I also had the test, and I've got the test results that my breast still lactates milk.
All right, would you please send me everything you have?
Yes, I will.
All right, don't send me originals. Send me everything you have, copies of it, all right?
Have you heard of this?
And give me, yes, I have.
I mean, I'm a sterile woman.
I understand.
This only happens now and then now, but when I first started it, it was, like, very strange because I saw the babies when I birthed them, and sometimes they would be, like, not ugly. They just would be different. Like, half of it would be animal, and the other half would be like an experiment, you know,
right.
Like trying to get get it right, you know what I mean? And I feel like now they have people in the physical
All right.
body.
I really mean it when I say send me photographs.
Thank you very much for not thinking I'm just...
No. You send me the photographs. Send me any medical literature or reports you've got.
The tests and everything?
Definitely. I'd be very interested in seeing that.
One last thing I wanted to ask you.
Yes.
Because of the lactation of the milk and everything that I have, and they can't have any explanation for it, they have done MRIs on me.
Yes.
And the one thing that is showing up is all these light, bright spots in my brain, and they're telling me that they're unidentified. They don't even know what they are.
Really?
Yes. And I have my MRI report, so I'll send that too.
All right. I'll look forward to all that. Thank you very much. Well, now that's really something, Helen.
That's interesting. I would love to see the material that she's talking about. I think it'd be fascinating.
There are some researchers I know of who would love to see that material as well, and I would get that up on the net right away.
You know, what she's saying is from, and this is not my area, but we're at the point now, I was watching a special not too long ago where they were talking about the pregnant man. Yeah,
you know, they're saying now that men can get pregnant, that science is now...
Or that they may be able to do it in some kind of scientific, duplicate some kind of uterus or something like that. So
yeah.
The fact that she's sterile doesn't necessarily put her out of the running if they can do it to a man who was never genetically designed to carry a child. So who knows? I don't know. It just sounds very, very interesting.
Well, I'll tell you, if my belly ever begins to bloat and I start to lactate, it's all over as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
that's it.
Well, I tell you, if my stomach starts to bloat, I'm going on a diet.
All right, hold on, Albert. Stay right there. Well, from sex to pregnancy. Yeah, it's true, I'm sorry to say, but soon men will be able to carry children from conception in the petri dish to term in the belly. It's a disgusting thought, but it's coming, they say.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
Take a long way home. Is you the joke of the neighborhood? Or should you care if you're feeling good? Take a long way home. Take a long way home. There are times that you feel you're part of the scenery. All the greenery is coming down, boy. And then you watch.
In my brain, hoping to find a way out. I've had enough of this continual rain. Changes are coming, no doubt. It's been a too long time with no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the times to get better. From me what I cannot give. I feel so lonesome at times. I have a dream that I wish I could live. It's burning holes in my mind. It's been a...
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th. 1999.
And if you want to reach me, you can reach me at artbell at mindspring.com. That's A-R-T-B-E-L-L at mindspring.com.
Now we take you back to the night of July 20th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
All right, Albert Taylor, back on.
Thank you, Art.
Do you believe in the concept of heaven and hell?
The concept of heaven and hell is kind of a Christian concept, and I would say that I'm not a religious person.
Yes.
I'm a spiritual person.
Yes.
And me personally, because now we're asking for my beliefs, me personally, I don't believe in hell. I would say that if you want to call it heaven, you could. If you want to call it Valhalla or the astral plane or whatever, I believe that there definitely is a location that non-physical or deceased spirits, entities, souls do go, and even in that location, there are multiple levels in that reality. And most of the things that I've discovered, because a lot of these areas I've had like out-of-body experiences.
Did you ever get to see What Dreams May Come?
Yes, I did.
Well, that describes what I think I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed the producer of that movie. And
yeah, I heard that show.
Good. Did you hear the NDE of Sarah?
No, I didn't.
You didn't. She was a young lady on her way home from church, volunteer work, who got hit and thrown, 100 yards or some tremendous amount of... She was on a bicycle, and she got hit hard,
mm-hmm.
and she died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all cessation of... In fact, she's still not fully recovered years later now. But she went to... a hellish place. She went to a place where there was more than hell. There was a combination of things. There were many places,
mm-hmm.
Sort of rooms. She would describe them as rooms,
mm-hmm.
where there would be thousands of tortured souls.
Mm-hmm.
She encountered a white light. She spent time with that. And then she returned. It took about 2 hours to unwind the story, but it was extremely convincing. And if you look at What Dreams May Come, it says basically that you judge yourself.
Right. That I do definitely agree with.
You do?
Definitely.
Well,
I don't believe that God is going to be judging us like we are going to be judging ourselves.
Yeah, it's not like a court case.
Right.
But, Albert, if you judge yourself, then surely there are those who will judge themselves not worthy of reward.
Definitely. Definitely.
And so where do they put themselves, Albert?
That's going to have a tremendous impact on your experience after leaving the physical body. Because not that that has to happen or that it's in the cards or etched in stone that it has to happen, but what I find, and I find this in the out-of-body experience, is that a lot of your thoughts can manifest into thought forms and experiences if you let them run amok. So if you have this belief that, you know, like in Dreams May Come, she had a belief that she had done so many horrible things, and that's why she was there, not because she was sentenced. Is because in that realm, you really have a lot of...
When I asked you the question, though, I didn't ask you who sent you there. I just said, do you believe in the concept of? So, really, you do believe in the concept of.
Definitely. Definitely. But I believe that it's not a permanent hell. You're not sentenced there, and you're not going to be there for eternity or anything like that. But, yes, definitely, you can imprison yourself with your own thoughts and beliefs. Definitely.
That's what makes sense to me.
You can do that in life, though. And in death, because a lot of people convince themselves of certain things here without any tangible proof and operate within a kind of a fenced life, so to speak. So you can definitely do it either way. It's about you. It's almost like this. I say this. We create our own realities in the body and out of the body in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. And for some, they would not allow themselves... They know what they did in their life. They would be their own worst, harshest judges.
Exactly.
It's like facing the hanging judge you'd never want to see yourself.
Exactly. If you knew that in the beginning when you were maybe stepping off the path, so to speak, whatever you may have be judging yourself on, if you knew that it's not about someone else judging me or like the child doing something that the parent doesn't know about, and if they get caught, the parent's going to chastise them.
Yep.
If you knew that beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was going to be you that was letting you down, that would have a tremendous impact on whether you did something or not.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Al Taylor. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm listening to you on 1510 KGA out of Spokane.
Yes, ma'am. They can hear that radio station up at the North Pole.
I'm basically right below the Canadian border.
Uh-huh.
And first of all, I want to thank you, Art, because I'm listening to you on my bay gym. I live in an area where I don't have electricity, haven't had for about 3 years, and that's my daily radio.
Wow.
Oh, no kidding.
No
you,
kidding.
You have no electricity at all.
Uh-uh.
But you do have a phone.
Yes. I was able to... hook on to someone else's line that's down the road a ways.
How do you stay warm?
I have a nice wood stove.
A wood stove.
I have propane cooking and refrigerator.
So you're living the simple life.
Yes.
Yep, the Bay Gin is great. Well, anyway, do you have a question for Al?
Yes, I do. I had an experience that happened several years ago, and it's a little bit different than what... your guest has been talking about tonight, but I thought he might have something he could explain to me or add to it.
All right.
I had some guests at my home. One was a professor from the University of Washington. This is when I lived in town. And one of the other students. And I walked out of the living room into the kitchen to get something for us all to drink, turned around, went back in the living room, and went face down on the floor. There was no sign of, oh, dear, I'm going to faint, or anything like that. I just went, boom. Down I was. And
unconscious?
Well, see, I don't know what happened. It just felt like it felt like there was a big vacuum cleaner, giant vacuum cleaner on my back.
Uh-huh.
And I was being sucked up out of my body. And then I was kind of hovering over, watching what's going on.
Wow.
He ran over to me, and obviously he must have known what was going on because I sure didn't. He was yelling, don't do this, don't do this, don't leave me, you mm-hmm. come back here right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was saying, come back here right now, and then draw your strength from me. And he just laid down and they threw blankets over me and stuff like that. And I just watched what was going on, but it was so strange because it had that, like I said, a giant vacuum cleaner
right.
sucking me up out. And then...
Wow.
Then...
Right.
Was
there any follow-on medical explanation for what occurred?
No, because I went to a doctor.
Of course.
And they said there was nothing wrong. And what was strange then was when I was in the examining room, the room filled up with these little tiny sparkles. I could see them in the air, and it didn't seem like anybody else could see them. I had an assurance that everything was going to be all right. And ever since then, I've had several different things happen. Like in my sleep, I fly
mm-hmm.
like Superman and go up and over buildings and things like this. And
fantastic.
Yeah.
I've done that, but my God, that Albert, that really brings a question to mind.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard that exact same thing happening before too.
In other words,
people dropping dead,
literally
no
dropping.
Cause.
Yeah. In other words, just dead or not,
right?
Leaving your body, and your body just goes boom.
Right.
Now
it collapses.
Now, I've always asked you, and you have always nobly denied that there's any danger to soul traveling.
Right.
But
still do.
But popping up out of one's body at a moment when you're coming back from the kitchen with a few refreshments, now, that's not so good.
No, well, that's a little different. That's not a consciously controlled out-of-body experience. That's borderline near-death experience, which is a little different. See, anything could happen to cause a near-death, a little heart rhythm. Arrhythmia or
sure.
Misfire or something like that. I've known quite a few people, or a dear friend of mine, Kimberly Clark Sharp, she had the same type of experience where she was walking out of a store and the next thing she knew, she dropped to the ground, body ceased to function, and they were doing CPR on her. She'd never had any problem prior to that. So I've heard that many, many times. I even know a personal friend that I attend the International Association of Near-Death Studies meetings at, and she had nothing wrong with her, and that same thing happened to her where she dropped dead. Now, she dropped and returned. I think it's very interesting that you have flying dreams and that this happened and the doctors can't explain it. Now, can I ask you this? Did your body cease to function? Did your heart stop pumping and they had to do CPR, or did you fall unconscious?
She's not here to answer.
Oh, because if her heart stopped functioning, of course, that's a physical abnormality that brought on a near-death experience. But I have...
But could there be spontaneous
yes.
OBEs?
Yes, and it's rare, but I have heard of people having problems staying in the physical form or in the body, and it happens spontaneous, but it's extremely rare, but it does happen.
It does happen.
Yes. It's very rare, though.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi.
Hello. You're going to have to yell a little, hon. You're not too loud. Where are you?
I'm in Kent, Ohio. I'm listening to you off of WTAM in Cleveland. Can you hear me better now?
The monster at the lake, yes.
Okay, I'm disabled, so I've got my headset on. I'm holding the mic up a little bit closer.
Right, that's much better.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for the fact that you explore quite intelligently and so many topics. I just was gifted by the universe with my first computer, having been homebound for 7 years. You can imagine how my world has changed since Independence Day. And I've checked out your sites. Your author list is amazing. And my friend Tom King has turned me on to your program a couple years ago, and I can get it erratically, but I'm really glad I was able to get it tonight and last night as well. I'm a Wiccan high priestess
mm-hmm.
and
an elder in a covenant of the goddess.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a high priestess since 1975,
mm-hmm.
I've had astral experiences since I was a child. Mm-hmm. Never knew much about them till I was old enough to find sources for, you know, real sources, accurate sources about astral experiences. Mm-hmm. So the discussion tonight has been fascinating to me. I've also had some UFO experiences, and I'm an astrologer. I emailed you with the please respond personally or give to your wife about the...
I have that email.
Oh, good, good. This is me.
Okay, now I know who you are.
My name is Lady Pythia.
Yes. Yes, I have your email.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess it's proper to ask Albert about people who are disabled. Obviously, this is a way to leave an unfortunate physical reality
mm-hmm.
and be free.
Right.
Except for the fact.
Right.
If I may interrupt. Albert,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've listened to the different things, ways that you've advised people, etc. When someone's disabled, it really depends upon the disability. If they're dealing with chronic pain, which I do,
mm-hmm.
severe,
oh, yes.
intractable, even with pain meds, it makes it so much harder to astral project
mm-hmm.
Right.
from the semi-near sleep, pre-sleep, you know, twilight state.
Right.
But I'm curious whether or not you have ever talked to people about giving them or given them any kind of instructions or suggestions for how to protect themselves when they're out in the astral plane. You know, the astral is the realm of thought forms, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, anything that's thought, you know, electrical impulses, they manifest in the realm of thought form. And when I was teaching, I taught English at Kent State and Youngstown State for 8 years. I had a number of students over the years. I mean, every single class, there were tons of students who had had really, really bad astral experiences and didn't know that that's what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask them different questions to distinguish between whether or not they were dream states or astral
mm-hmm.
states. And I suggested to all of them, even one included a Catholic nun at the hospital, who kept getting taken in the same place in the astral where her father had died,
mm-hmm.
Some suggestions for how she could change the scenario. But with my students, my primary thing to tell them was, you know, imagine your body as if it's, like, immersed or covered, had a second layer of skin that's like blue-white light.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine yourself in a circle of blue-white light that turns into a sphere. And just remind yourself or affirm to yourself that you are protected by the light. You are in the light and protected by the light. And all students over those 8 years who started adopting a protection mechanism before, they started doing that when they
never had bad experience.
Exactly. They started doing that when they went to sleep at night.
All right. I think that Albert would agree with you on that aspect of it. But
I think you should use any technique that you can to that you
right.
feel safe.
But you know what? I want to go back to what she said earlier.
Okay.
The last part, I think, was obvious. But the earlier part, I think, was important. She said she has, as a result of her disability,
uh-huh.
intractable pain.
Uh-huh.
And I can see how intractable pain would prevent you in any conscious or even semi-conscious state from
right.
achieving the kind of altered state one would require to travel astrally.
Right.
So
right.
what?
It'll
it's a good
keep
question.
You rooted.
Yeah, so what do you say to those people?
Well, pain is a very dominant force when we feel it. But, and this is, you've probably seen this many, many times on different shows and read about this, something interesting about some particular yogis, and even if you've seen some practices in India where they do body piercing and hang things from the nipples and all kinds of things that would make us cringe over here,
right.
but they have trained their minds to ignore the pain and are very, very successful at it. I'm not saying that everybody who has an abnormality going on in their physical body can do this,
right.
but you know what? It's a great start because I do believe that the mind
the consciousness, soul consciousness, dictates to the physical body when it's well-trained and not the other way around. So practicing to control your thoughts and your body and in simple experiments like the heart rate, practice on slowing that down, things like that. The further you train your body, your mind, the more you're going to be able to ignore your five senses and what they're telling you. And I do believe that it still is possible to escape.
Gotcha. So in other words, intractable pain is not an intractable problem.
Right. I believe, and it's not easy, but it's definitely possible.
I've got you. All right. Good answer. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Where are you, please?
I'm in Anacortes, Washington.
Okay, you're going to have to yell at us a bit. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm talking to you, listening to you on 1340 KLKI.
Yes, sir.
And my question for Mr. Taylor was, I had a chance a couple years ago to talk to a quantum physicist, and he was talking on a subject about when you dream, it's possible for your soul or your mind to travel to different places.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't really, I've been listening in and out tonight. But I was wondering if that had any relation to outer body experiences.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely it does, yes. Yes,
I'd say
it does.
That's been hitting the nail right on the head. That's
well,
exactly
it really is strange. It really is strange because I have talked to some theoretical physicists, Albert, who suggest that this kind of travel may indeed be based in reality, that there are other dimensions, and that in the world of physics, the amount of power to reach these other dimensions may be well beyond mankind's grasp for a long, long time, but not metaphysically.
Right, right, right. And it's not permanently beyond our grasp.
All right. I've got 1 hour left. Do you want it or do you want to go to bed?
Definitely.
If that's a definite.
What I live for, Art.
It's what you live for. All right.
Definitely.
Well, then stay right where you are and we will be right back. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM with Albert Taylor, the Soul Traveler.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
If you love her, then you must send her somewhere where she's never been before. Worn out phrases and longing gazes won't get you where you want to go.
No!
Birds of love, soft and...
Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired July 20th, 1999.
Good morning, everybody. It probably is, you know, in the end, all about love, isn't it?
The audio subscription service of Coast to Coast AM has a new name, Coast Insider. You'll still get all the same great features for the same low price. The package includes podcasting, which automatically downloads shows for you, and the iPhone app. You'll also get our amazing download library of 3 full years of shows. That's over 1,000 shows for you to collect and enjoy. If you're a fan of Coast, you won't want to be without Coast Insider. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up. Looking for the truth? You'll find it on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
What's going on around this planet right now are people who are just fed up. They're fed up with dictatorships, and they've had enough. Now, the big question is, can it happen here? And I think absolutely. One day, if we continue to have this spread of the haves and the have-nots, this continuing push for a new world order, it could happen. Mark my word, it could happen here too. Let's hope not.
Now we take you back to the night of July 20th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
You know, I got a piece of email that said, hey, Art, Portland, or people up there, are not the only people that have to dial 10 digits. Apparently in Miami, to reach even a local caller, you've got to dial 10 digits. Now, you know, somehow I thought as the years rolled by and the millennium crawled up on us, things would get easier. Before long, we'd be talking to people on our wristwatch, right? But no, now we're having to dial 10 digits. I guess it's a good thing we got touch tones, huh? Albert, welcome back. Are you there, Albert?
Yes, I am.
Good, good, good. All right. Wanted to be sure. All right. To the phones. A lot of people want to talk to you. So first time caller line, Albert Taylor is right here.
Yeah, am I on?
You're on.
Yes, you
okay,
are.
Mr. Taylor. You said it's possible for interplanetary travel through out-of-body experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it possible to contact other life forms through this experience?
I can only say that it is possible for you to perceive whether they can communicate with you. I don't know about the life forms.
Yeah.
If they do exist, it is possible. I put it this way. Not only is that possible, I don't think there are any limitations. I think the only limitations are your ability to focus your thoughts.
Okay. So, okay, in regards with the Prime Directive, you know, the old Star Trek thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a safe thing to do, to try to contact these people? I mean, because it's always been thought of that the reasons why it's either the government's hiding the fact that we have contacted aliens or the aliens don't want to contact us directly because of the Prime Directive. Do you think that's a safe thing to do?
Well, I'm a metaphysician and I'm a spiritualist, and I say that everything is happening just as it should. So if you're capable of doing that and that happens, then I don't see that being something.
Just how the cards lay, then.
I don't believe we have that much control over what's going on regarding universal law and consciousness. I think everything that happens is a learning phase for each of us, and
yeah,
it is meant to happen. So if you have that capability and you do that, then I think that that is meant to happen.
The more power to you. Okay. Hey, CC Radio, I'm using it. Thanks.
All right, sir. Thank you.
You
very much, and take care. It is an amazing device, this this radio.
Yeah, to run out and get one.
All right. You should. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Here's another CC radio guy.
All right.
And the wind-up flashlight.
Yes, sir?
When I was a child, I'd lay there at night before I'd go to sleep and start, I guess, between, you know, losing consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
I would have periods where I'd hover over the house. I could see myself laying in the bed, and
right,
I would go up to the ceiling. And then as I got older, it started getting less and less. And I was left with one weird quirk. I can stand in front of a mirror for a while and stare at it. And this might sound odd to y'all, but it will, I'll actually change into another form.
Your image.
You ever heard of such?
Your image would change.
Yes.
Well,
that's just through my eyes. I mean, my friends would, you know,
Well, I've heard of experiments with mirrors. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, people, you know, we'd go into the bathroom or whatever and look in the mirror and say, Merry Widow or something like that. But on a scientific note, a lot of people have done experiments with things called a psychomantium. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Raymond Moody.
Right, Raymond has done it. I've talked to Raymond about it, and a lot of other people have duplicated it. I think even the Monroe Institute has experimented with it. But that's where you put a mirror on one part of the wall with a chair facing it, usually black curtains or some kind of flat black walls environment, and turn off the lights. And people, even Raymond, well, this is what's amazing to me. Raymond is such a scientist. He cracks me up. Even Raymond will neither confirm nor deny that these things are possible, but he has a whole list of stories he can tell you about personal experiences that have happened to him. So I have heard of people doing that, and I don't know if the mirror allows us to blank our mind or to use that other part of us that can see beyond the mirror. I don't know if that happens, or maybe it's just something that helps us, but definitely people have experiences like that.
Yeah, because I would stare in the mirror for a long time, and I could really put on a show, but, of course, nobody else would see it.
Right.
Well, listen,
right.
Thanks a lot, and Art, keep up the good work. Enjoy my radio.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Take care. Let's see. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Just fine, sir.
Oh, that's good. I'm listening on the Internet.
Okay.
I have a comment. When I was practicing yoga one time, I found myself rising out of my body, and I'm wondering if that pertains to what you're discussing here. What kind of an experience was that?
That's the advanced level that I was talking about. One of the easiest ways is the interrupted sleep technique or through the sleep process. The advanced level is through meditation, and yogi or yoga meditation is part of that. So that is excellent that you were able to do that. I think if you can do it through the meditation, then the sky's the limit. It truly is. That's what everyone, I believe, should try to aspire to and attain, is the ability to do it through meditation and yoga.
My only problem has been controlling where I go and what happens. I don't seem to have much control.
Takes practice.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. I have another quick comment. You were talking earlier about the afterlife and what happens when you die. Now, my belief, and I don't know if you would agree with this or not, is you end up what you think. Like, if you believe in a heaven or hell for where you're going, that's where you end up. What do you think about that?
Well, I think a lot of things happen to us on the other side or in the non-physical that have to do with our belief systems, but those things aren't permanent. And in that afterlife situation, eventually whatever the universal reality or truth of where we are is, that eventually filters through. And a lot of the things that we've taken in or we believe that it's going to be like, it eventually dissipates and we get to see a clear picture or get a clear understanding of what that reality is all about.
Kind of like we all ultimately end up in the same place.
Yes, exactly. Eventually, all those beliefs, all the religious things that we have, because, you know, different parts of the world have different religious beliefs. So that shouldn't matter if we're talking about a non-physical area. It should all be the same if it exists at all.
Right.
So eventually, all the things that we bring with us from this physical plane eventually dissipates, and we see what's really going on.
Gee, just think, if we could only get to that place here on Earth, most of the wars and the killing and the strife and the human misery would all stop.
Yep.
Heaven on Earth, right?
Isn't that right?
Yeah, definitely. It would be a wonderful place for all of us. The thing is that we, in the physical plane, I believe, have come up with reasons to separate ourselves from our fellow man, be it whatever you see in your, whatever your eyes tell you, whatever you hear, or whatever. But the reality of the situation is that we aren't separate and that we all are of similar substance and origin. And if the quicker we can realize that, the better, the easier and the quicker we're going to get along, and the better and the more prosperous I believe we're going to be.
Ascension of some sort, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, and take care. Interesting. That is true, though. We kill on this planet in the name of our gods.
In the name of everything. In the name of a spot of land. in the name of spiritual beliefs or religious beliefs, in the name of visual shades of color, in the name of handicaps, of everything. We divide ourselves on based on almost everything you can imagine. You know what? Remember the Star Trek episode where I think Frank Gorshin was in it, where half of his face was black, maybe the right side.
I remember.
And then the other guys was the right
yes.
side was white.
I remember.
That was even a line to draw. Well, he's black on the right side, you know. So I think it does whatever differences we seem to pick those and use those as a tool to separate ourselves.
And they were at war, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
The ones who were black on the right versus the ones who were black.
Yes, exactly.
I remember that.
And Kirk and his crew didn't know the difference.
Yeah, I remember that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
My question involves near-death experiences. The thought occurred to me that maybe adults are influenced by things they see and hear in the media. I was wondering if you'd ever come across a child that has had a near-death experience and the outcome is any different.
Those are the most fascinating stories I've ever heard as a child. My first year of being a member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, IANS, and I met a kid, I think he was 13 or 14 years old, but he'd had a near-death experience when he was 7. Mm-hmm. And one of the fascinating things about it is it wasn't religious oriented. It wasn't any of that. It was just kind of spiritually based, and he told it in a way that it didn't matter what religion you were, it still fit in. And I thought that was fascinating, and it was told with innocence and honesty.
Absolutely, because some of the ones I've heard about, they'll lean towards Christianity or Judaism or whatnot, and I thought maybe that a child would have a different outcome.
That's what I found in the child that I had a chance to talk to, is it wasn't bent on his mother's beliefs. It was bent on just a spiritual experience.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Okay, sir. Thank you for your call. First time caller line. You're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is John in Alaska.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Okay.
Good. I started listening to you a couple hours ago. And when I was a kid, I remembered it, and then you forget after a while. But when I was a kid, I used to do that all the time. And some kids went off, and I sat by a tree, and I went over and listened to what they were saying, and later I started telling them what they were saying, and my sister freaked.
Mm-hmm.
Who was real religious. She says, the devil's in you, so I quit
mm-hmm.
doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started hearing you tonight, and yeah, that's pretty good. I think I'll get your book.
Well, you wouldn't believe, you maybe would believe, a lot of the people in my family are very Christian or religiously oriented, and when I started investigating this definitely was out of the norm. I was raised a good Christian, a good Catholic boy, you know, and this was different. And a few of the people in my family to this day are very reluctant to speak to me, even though they are my close relatives.
Yeah.
You know, because
they think
it's something evil.
I figured maybe I outgrew it or something. But, yeah, when I was a kid, I used to do that all the time. I'd sit under a tree in the summer, nice and warm.
You didn't outgrow it. You were simply conditioned out of it.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy of the whole experience. Children are open to these things and have incredible experiences. Even my own son of 9 years old tells me things that I am just flabbergasted at. But then we grow up where people say, no, you can't do that, or you can only do this, or that means something evil. And we condition ourselves, or we are conditioned by our environment, to turn off to these abilities.
I remember it as a really neat experience. I'm going to have to get your book. See if I can do it again.
All right.
You can. Think positive. You can do it.
All right.
Just don't put a time frame on it.
All right, I'm going to work on it then.
All right.
And great show. I've only been listening for about 6 months, but I like it.
I appreciate your call. Thank
you. All right.
Good to have you on the air.
Good luck.
Let's see. East of the Rockies, I guess you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Bob in Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Okay, this has been happening to me for about 2 years, so, you know, what we were talking about. I've had the vibration coming out of that. But I've never quite come out of the body yet.
Mm-hmm.
Get kind of nervous about it just before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But and then I've also had, you know, you hear the voices just before it happens too.
Right.
But then the one incident that I'm really calling about is that went through the vibration period, and I don't know if I was, you know, starting to come out of the body or not, but I could hear, sound like a couple guys yelling and stuff, looking for people who could hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, this guy can hear us over here, and they come, and they started talking to me, and that scared me. And I just said, I'm out of here. You know, so what was that? Was I going into some, like, past life regression automatically, or what?
No, I think what it is, do you remember in Ghost, the Academy Award-winning movie Ghost?
Yes.
When Patrick Swayze was searching around for someone that could hear him, and then he stumbled upon Whoopi.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if you were suddenly thrusted into that state or died and you found yourself still fully conscious and still in some kind of body, but the only thing is the people who were still in the physical body couldn't hear you? And wouldn't you search around for someone to be able to link, or if you were really obsessed with the physical plane, you would search around for someone to hear you, to validate that you are still real. And if that person did hear you, I think you'd be around them all the time just trying to communicate with them.
It just scared the hell out of me, and I was like, no,
it scared me too. It scared me so bad that I stayed up all night long afraid to go back to sleep. I totally understand.
It happens to me a lot because I'm a driver, and I don't know if it's like if I sleep on my steering wheel, you know, a little bit head over there and it vibrates. I don't know if that does anything. But,
well, it scares the hell out of us little four-wheelers.
Yeah, no, I stopped. I don't know if it has something to do with the vibration of the truck, but it happens a lot when I'm, like, taking a little nap.
Yeah.
I start going through the vibration thing, and, you
that's
know,
right.
Well, you just
my
have
eyes
to keep...
will be open. I can look at my feet, and it's like, well, I don't think I really want to do this while I'm sitting in the truck.
Right.
You said the key phrase, a little nap. It's a little piece of time to sleep, and that's when it usually happens. When we sleep 8 hours very heavily, we generally don't remember anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the only place you and I differ, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
What about the 18-wheeler that suddenly veers off the road and there's a head-on collision? Now, maybe sometimes it's a little nap. And maybe sometimes it's a little more than a nap. And, you know, while I know that you say that all of this is safe,
mm-hmm.
I'm not utterly convinced, having talked to some people who have had bad experiences.
Right.
And knowing that a lot of people die in their sleep. It's the old one I hit you with every time.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that occasionally trucks do veer off the road, and it wasn't a little nap. It's the big nap. I don't know how you can be so sure that it's so safe.
Well, the only, you know, this is what I can say, and it's still consistent to this day after all this time of actually, once I found out what it was, the only time I have had negative experiences was in the beginning when I didn't know what this was and I had a lot of fearful thoughts. To this day, and it's been quite a while since you and I have been speaking.
It has,
I think this is like our 10th show or something like that. To this day, I do not have negative experiences. I would think I would have one or two to spice up my life or my projections, but I haven't had any. They're all wonderful experiences that hinge on my past experiences. So mm-hmm. My knowledge and experiences are taking me somewhere. They're linear. It's an understanding that is becoming more and more apparent. So that's the best thing. If I had any, I would share. Now,
do you have any sense
you can't have any bad experiences.
No, I know. I understand. Do you have any sense of where it's going for you? In other words, is this an evolution that's headed to some place for you?
Well, I think. Well, I like to think that this is all about total self-realization, total 100%. There are some people who are born in this time period and have been born in the past, that I like to use the phrase, they were turned on. They were on. They were not switched off to the non-physical. I think this whole thing for me, and which is definitely happening to this day, is that I'm slowly turning on. It's not like a light switch. It's more of a rheostat, and it's getting brighter and brighter, and with that knowledge, I'm able to do things that I never dreamed possible.
All right, hold it right there. I'm Art Bell, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999. listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from July 20th, 1999.
And you never know what this program is going to be. It's kind of a cross between science and science fiction, and I don't know what it is. But I do know this. We vacillate between having hard scientists on the air and people who take, well, the kind of approach that Albert's taking right now. And he's been in both. And as I listen to these hard scientists, the physicists, the mathematicians, the astronomers, and I listen to the metaphysics-type folks, I'm still not sure today where the answer is. I'm really not. Are you? I sit here and I read articles about people building machines, which, by the way, are almost done, which will attempt to duplicate the Big Bang. Literally could cause a Big Bang, a black hole, could cause the Earth to wink out, boom, like that. So where are the final answers? I don't know. I don't really know. Do you?
Streamlink to July 20th, 1999, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Welcome back, Albert.
Thank you.
You know, I was just sort of ruminating there at the bottom of the hour. I've got this story in front of me, which I'm holding up for the audience. They can see it on my webcam. It's entitled, it's from London, and it's entitled, Big Bang Machine Could Destroy Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And they are designing this machine now, which they think can literally recreate the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Or may create a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may just totally destroy us. And they're going ahead with this. Now, they're studying it and worrying about it, but inevitably they're going ahead with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I say I have hard scientists on the air, and then I have people who have more metaphysical answers, and I haven't made my own mind up yet fully, Albert, where the answers are,
mm-hmm.
or where the disasters might be for the human race.
Yeah, you know, science, I believe curiosity and research are all so important, but I think we should have some kind of restraint so that we don't end up being like children playing with a loaded gun, you know, end up opening a can of worms where we can't put it back in the can. I read an interesting book a while back about a scientist creating a microscopic or a small, minute black hole.
That's right.
And this black hole was independent of the gravitational pull of Earth, and it would actually go through everything, and eventually, as it would go through Earth and come back around and go through Earth again, it was collecting more and more density and more mass.
That's right.
And it was almost impossible to stop. The Big Bang, I'm not sure, you know.
I read that same book.
It was a fascinating book, wasn't it?
It was. Oh, absolutely fascinating.
Excellent.
Yeah, they're miniature black holes.
Right, right. And it was killing people and going through houses and you name it.
Yep.
That kind of thing, you know, if we have to know our limitations. I think we have to be very cautious when we're exploring new ground, new technologies, and trying to duplicate what's already out there that nature or God or whatever you want to say has created. We have to be cautious. You know, we're open-minded but cautious.
They'll push the button, though. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I hope that we can, whatever we do to find out things, are things that we can put back in the can if they don't seem to be working out.
The sub-headline says, and it shows a little picture, it says, ready for blast-off, a Brookhaven engineer puts finishing touches to the ion collider.
Mm. Wow.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi. I have a question and a comment.
All right.
Okay, my question concerns the vibrational state that people describe at the beginning of an out-of-body experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that that can feel like being violently tossed to the left and right, even though you're aware that your body isn't physically moving?
Oh, that's a little different. What that is, in a lot of cases, is that's the astral body rocking, trying to get free. Mm-hmm. You've gone past the vibrational stage.
Because
that's actual, like, borderline disconnection.
That's the state I usually seem to start in. I never feel a paralysis, or I never hear any sounds or anything. It just, that's the part that I always notice.
Right. Well, that's okay, because, see, the faster you go through the disconnection process, the fewer things you're going to feel. The faster you go, you're not going to feel the vibration. You're not going to feel the paralysis. You may get right to the rocking or the feeling as if your body is swaying back and forth or even rolling or trying to dislodge of some sort. So, but that's okay. It's the faster, the better. That way there's not so much discomfort.
Oh, okay. And my comment was, have either of you ever seen the movie Eden? It's from 1997.
Eden. Was that... tell me a little bit about it. Was that about
me too?
Vietnamese woman in reincarnation.
Yes, Joanna Goeing, the actress. It's set in the mid 1960s. She suffers from multiple sclerosis and she starts astral projecting.
Oh no, I don't believe I've seen that one.
Oh, it's a very touching movie. If you ever get a chance, I think you'd find it.
It's on my list. It's on my list. Anything involving astral projection or out of body experiences is on my list. It's called Eden.
Yes,
I would definitely check it out.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Take care. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How you doing?
Okay, you're going to have to yell at us.
Oh, I'm going to have to yell?
Yeah.
I've got a sleeping house, of course.
That's better. Go ahead.
I have a couple of things. I experienced a lot of astral travel when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my mid-30s now, and once I came to know what it was...
Mm-hmm.
It seemed that, and stopped being afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of stopped.
Mm.
Like that loud hum
mm-hmm.
became the soft buzz.
Mm.
It just became like a dull hum.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was about 16, I'm 34 now, since I was about 16, I've only had two experiences that I remember. One was sleeping, and I went to Australia for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And woke up 6 hours later, didn't know why I didn't have a tan.
Mm-hmm.
And then after my grandfather passed away, I had a visitation from him.
Hmm. Excellent.
Which was about a year ago. We had martinis together. Well, he taught me how to drink martinis. And I told my mom about it because he gave her a massage in the visitation.
Fascinating.
Which comforted her, but it seems that... I don't know if I'm just not remembering.
Well,
because I'm so comfortable with it now that I know what it is.
You said it stopped happening. Now, I assume it was happening on its own without you attempting it, trying to make it happen.
I used to have that severe fear.
Right.
When I was, like, on the ceiling trying to reenter.
Right. So, and you didn't...
And I could feel myself trying to fight it when I would be leaving,
mm-hmm.
when I was about 15.
Were you trying to have an out-of-body experience, or did it just happen?
That was when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
And then once I found out what it was and realized it was nothing to be afraid of...
It's decreased and stopped.
Yes, or it's just not affecting me the way it was.
Well, I don't know. It sounds like it was just happening to you without you trying, and you experimented when it was available or when it presented itself to you. But if you become proactive about it and try to make it happen and read some of the techniques that I've written in my book and in other books, if you've done it once, you can do it again. If you can do it once, you can do it many, many, many times.
Yeah, I did it many times when I was very young.
Right. Well, you're still that same spiritual being or that same soul.
Yeah, of course.
You still have those capabilities and you can have other experiences.
Of course. It seems that I just don't remember it.
That's okay.
And I have a question for you, Art.
Sure.
William Cooper.
Yes.
Is he around still?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Nope.
Oh, okay. It just seemed that you guys were on kind of a similar level on certain things.
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
He thinks I'm the devil's toe jam. He thinks I'm
the
heralder of the New World Order.
I thought I was.
What?
I am. That's what I've been told I was.
No, that's,
I am.
That's what he's written about.
The heralder of the New World Order.
So I don't keep track of him.
Oh, no, no.
When I take over, it's all over for him, so.
Oh, you're taking over?
Okay,
I'm glad I know who to call.
I got to go. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you. Wild card line, you're with Albert Taylor. Hi.
All three of you are wrong. I'm the master of the New World.
Okay, well then.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anyway, Albert, I've been having the, I'm 41 years old.
Uh-huh.
I've been having these experiences since I was just a little kid.
Uh-huh.
What I've noticed lately or whatever, that this plane doesn't seem to be the be-all and end-all that, that some people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the pinnacle of spiritual experience. As a matter of fact, it seems that there's an emptiness about it. And I'm not trying to push an agenda. I have a question for Art, if I could. I'm not trying to push an agenda, or, but when you are become lucid, or when I become lucid to where I am
mm-hmm.
In this plane, and if my thoughts or my mouth says Jesus Christ or something, that's not very well accepted on that plane. Am I missing something here, or as an experiment, have you ever mentioned his name on that plane and saw the reaction? Because it's really not that pleasant.
Well, no, I haven't mentioned it, but
mm-hmm.
having done a lot of reconnaissance missions, I call them.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
What I found out, and I said this before,
okay.
is that there are a lot of religious beliefs that are only on the lower areas of the astral plane or that next level.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those religious beliefs do not exist in the higher realms of consciousness.
In other words, they, as you ascend, they fade slowly.
Yes.
Hey, Art.
Yes.
On August, between August 11th and August 18th, we have the last solar eclipse of the millennium, and then we have the...
August 11th, yeah.
Right, and then we have the Great Grand Cross on August 18th, plus the Cassini.
Right.
Space. Are you planning on having any guests to address that, maybe Hoagland or someone like that? In this 1 week we have all these things coming together?
I'll see what I can put together.
I love it. Thank you very much, sir.
All right.
Take care.
It is a hell of a year, Albert,
mm-hmm.
that we're going through right now.
To the new millennium.
It's going to be a really wild time between now and the very end of the year.
Definitely.
A lot of things are going to be going on.
Definitely.
Paul is absolutely right about that.
We're getting ready to make a shift, I think, just to finally start accomplishing things.
I know. I can feel it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And I am from New York, and we do know about Brookhaven Labs. It's quite a place.
Well, look, if they are successful, it won't make any difference whether you're in New York or whether you're out here in the desert, the way I'm reading it.
Well, we'll have our out-of-body experience.
Yeah, everybody will.
Everybody will.
Yeah, that'll answer the questions. It's amazing that the last hour you really touched upon some very important things, and I think I'd like to get back into the, raising your vibration and learning how to meditate, and that's a very good way of a good approach.
Mm-hmm.
It just might bypass a lot of the astral, adventures that people sometimes have, and it's not some negative thing, but it's just where they live, it's just there. I guess it's necessary. And it is. But I wanted to bring back a point that people who do travel out of the body, and there's different ways of traveling. You mentioned astral projection.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned soul travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you were trying to make a distinction between them.
No,
or at least there might be different levels of...
different levels,
body.
Yes.
Different
but
levels, yeah, but not between those two. I say those two things are the same.
Okay, and of course there's mental travel too.
Right, well, that's a different vibrational level.
Mm-hmm. I do want you to talk a little bit about how you can raise your vibration so you can avoid many of the negative things, because sometimes people do experience.
I would like to talk
about one experience very quickly. It'll take a minute.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning when I tried to move out of the body, this was in 73, and I was living with a young lady, and I was out of the body. She went to the bathroom. When she came back, she saw me in two places at the same time, in bed and, out of the body. And she saw that. And I did concur. I did have the experience of seeing her trying to communicate, to tell her not to scream.
Wow.
She did not get my communication. She did scream quite loudly.
Uh-huh.
So that was a validation from someone from external, who wasn't...
I have never heard that before.
Albert, I know you probably heard of cases like that where people
are external. Oh, yeah, yes,
I have. Yeah.
Albert,
those same people are able to see spirits, though, also. If you can see the astral form, you can see ghosts and have other talents, too.
Well, she was definitely not looking for this.
Mm-hmm.
But she found
it. That's generally how it happens, and most of us aren't looking for it. It kind of leaps up and surprises us.
That would do it. I got to tell you, folks, that would do it for me. If I thought I was having an OBE, and my wife said, "Oh my God," and screamed, "I see you in two places," that'd probably stop my heart.
That would add a different level of realism.
Yes, it would.
Well, it also got me into a little difficulty because I was stuck in the body. I couldn't move the body, you say, the paralysis.
Right.
And I guess you might have seen me stiff as a board there, too.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that must have added to the drama quite a bit. It sure added to my drama, trying to move, and I couldn't.
Well, let me share this with you real quick because there's probably a lot of people out there who have the paralysis and they're not looking to have an out-of-body experience. They just want to end the paralysis and maybe come out of it.
Right.
So if you are, the big thing that I found is that most of us are trying to move the entire body and reconnect with the entire body, and it's very difficult and maybe even frightening because we can't make it happen right away. But instead of trying to move the entire body and jump back in and sit up or something like that, just think about moving a small portion of your body, maybe the little finger or your toe or something like that, because what happens is once you're able to move one of those, it kind of just dominoes, and eventually you're reconnected and you can move the physical body again.
Either that or think immediately of the IRS.
Well, I think you just move your accounts on that one. Well, at least it's the bigger body of your account.
Yeah.
I did. Once I had a paralysis, but that was under a different situation, and I did move a finger and I called for help, break loose, and it worked.
Uh-huh.
But that was a different type of paralysis that people get when they're before they're abducted.
Mm.
And there might be a correlation between that and moving the astral body out and kind of having an astral.
That's also a very, very interesting observation. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think they are related.
In other words, you would be most vulnerable for abduction.
Well, maybe you can perceive it as abduction, but maybe it's not really abduction. Maybe it's something else.
Well, I wonder how many people perceive OBEs as abductions.
Right. That's what I wonder also.
Without knowing better, why wouldn't you?
Exactly. If there's something non-physical, especially when I found out that if you think it's an alien, you're going to see that whether it is or not. So, and if it's a guide or something, or an angel, whatever you want to call it, that's trying to take you somewhere, and you're perceiving it a little bit differently, of course you're going to think you're being abducted.
If you're a Catholic, you might perceive it to be a saint.
You just might, or an angel with wings.
That's it. All right. Very quickly, West of the Rockies, you're on there with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yes, hi, Art.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I sent you an email about 2 weeks ago asking you if you could find somebody about OBEs. Did you get that?
Well, here he is.
Yeah. I've read all three of Robert Munro's books, and I've been trying for quite some time to have an OBE, and I have been unable to.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that there's some people that just can't...
Can't do it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's going to be a percentage of people who haven't had the experience as of yet, but I always say you can't do it when you die. When you're dead, then you haven't been able to do it in that lifetime. There's always hope as long as you're breathing.
Okay, so just keep...
Keep plugging on and try to lower your expectations and just kind of let it happen.
Okay.
All right. There is probably such a thing as trying too hard.
Yes, definitely. 100% there is something of that nature.
Because it sure happened to me when I was not expecting it, nor soliciting it, or wanting it, or even thinking
it. Well, the key is surrender and release. Don't try to control it. Surrender, and it will happen naturally.
Albert, we'll have you back again, of course.
Art, it has been a pleasure.
It always is. Albert,
thank you. Give my regards to Ramona, and I will be talking to you later.
Good night, my friend.
Good night.
That's Albert Taylor. All right, folks, onward we go, and we'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll try to get inside the mind of a killer. Not such a pleasant place to be, but if you want to understand some of the tragedies that occur in our lives, maybe it's not such a bad idea. Anyway, we'll...